Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So isn't it refreshing that all our suspicions, Christopher O'Brien, are confirmed? The NSA does know what we're doing and when we do it.
Well, stop the presses. Jeez. I mean, God, since the late 90s, I've been saying that they're probably amassing daily a digital dossier on everybody, and I think that's probably true. And now they even have the storage capacity and the ability to store data, you know, visual data, video. So it's a brave new world, Gene. Big Brother is definitely alive and blinking.
Well, I don't know if they're blinking, they're just watching.
Well, they're blinking now that this Snowden character has come out and officially spilled the beans that we have an administration that is carrying on the tradition of the previous administration and into the realm of questionable practices involving throwing nets out there and collecting data whether they need it or not, just in case they might need it in the future, they can go back and refer to it. And that to me it goes against everything that the Constitution says about privacy and to have a private life. And this is just par for the course. It's an emerging corporatocracy and a fascist state in the eyes of some people.
Oh, I like that, emerging corporatocracy. But that's been true for a long time. I mean, some of the laws were signed by Clinton in the 1990s. The FISA court, which came about after Watergate, goes back, therefore, to the 70s.
Yeah, but that's on a per-case basis. I mean, what they're doing is they're doing a complete, you know, monitoring of the entire communication grid on the planet. I mean, they've got it all dialed in. This PRISM program makes Echelon look like a primitive tool. It's par for the course. I'm like most people. I have nothing to hide, but I still think that we have a right to our privacy. And this latest word is just showing us that we're incrementally creeping towards, you know, a totalitarian scenario here. And I'm not happy about it, but, you know, I'm just one guy. What can I do? You know, write my congressman, right? Who's in the pocket of who knows how many lobbyists and corporate interests. It's sad. But we're not a political show. So.
Well, every time we talk about government secrecy with regard to UFOs, we suddenly become a political show. Because if the government is hiding something, who was doing the hiding? The National Security Agency, private industry, getting this stuff under black budgets? What's going on? It becomes political. Anytime we talk about anything related to government activities, the politics has to become part of it. We'll get into more of what the government might know about bizarre creatures and extraordinary animals a bit later in the show with Nick Redfern.
Other monsters.
They must be talking about me. I resembled that remark. All right. So last week we had Gary Heseltine, who's been involved in UFO research for some years, but it's interesting with him and other people, there's always a defining event that triggers your interest. So in Gary's case, in 1975, he saw a UFO, and simultaneously there was a brief power outage. That changed his life. So even while he was a police detective, he was checking out UFOs on the site.
Classic story.
Classic story. When I was 11 years old, my brother just happened to leave a copy of Flying Saucers from Outer Space by Major Donald Kehoe on his coffee table. I saw the book and said, and I didn't talk to him, he was at work. I asked his wife, can I have this book? And she said, well, you know, it's a library book, but if you agree to return it, we'll give it to you. And I said, fine. So I took the book, and I did return it, by the way. okay, in case people are wondering. So the Brooklyn Public Library will not, 400 years after the fact, come after me looking for this book. Besides, it's in the public domain now, so it doesn't matter. You can get it online. That changed my life. Started reading about UFOs all over the place. Except with Gary Heseltine. What bothers me is all these years he's interested in UFOs, but he never went back to checking source material to see if there was a power outage reported then, what connection it might have had, what was in the newspapers about it. Was there a story in the local papers? It sounds like he reports the experience but wasn't terribly curious as to the information to back up what he said.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too difficult to follow up on that and go back. I mean, it's in his town there. He could go back and look at the newspaper morgue and see if there are any articles there and do some digging into it. I'm surprised he hasn't done that.
Well, I gave him a homework assignment, as our listeners remember. I said, okay, Gary, we want you to go back and look for the documentation. Check the newspaper morgues. Ask people in your hometown. He did meet somebody at a UFO convention, someone he knew as a child, who also saw the UFO, also had the power outage. Now, it's not that there haven't been sightings where people see UFOs and there is a power outage. Some people think that UFOs caused a major power outage in New York City in the mid-1960s. That's an old story.
Yeah.
Because the power substation where the event was triggered, UFOs were seen in that vicinity. So it's possible. I'm not going to dismiss it. But someone who is so interested in UFOs, someone who uses that event as the defining moment that changes his life, he doesn't go back and check? I don't know. What do you say about that? Maybe he's afraid to look up the story and find it's not quite what he remembers.
Just have to light a fire under his tail.
Well, I'm doing that deliberately.
Yeah. Well, we have somebody else that was able to come up with from about the same time period.
Right.
75, 76 time period. Our former co-host had quite a life-changing experience himself and has been asked for a number of years to bolster that claim, and sure enough, a friend of his or associate put him in touch with a Venezuelan investigator who dug up out of the newspaper morgue, dug up a headline story that confirms that there was an event. Of course, some of the details are a little different, but kudos to some digging and some perseverance.
Well, I think you have to egg people on to find that information. I think part of it is maybe there's a fear, and I won't say it's on the part of Gary Heseltine or our former co-host, a fear that when they find the actual event written out, it won't be what they remembered. Their memories may be colored by their life experiences. We don't know. But I'm glad it happened in one very notable case, and I hope it's going to happen with Gary Heseltine. So back in 1975, the power outage, the UFO sighting, our UK listeners, I'm sure, will be happy to help out. Let's see what happens. Today, after a few months, we welcome back one of the most prolific paranormal book authors on the planet. I think maybe second only to Brad Steiger.
Right. He's a one-man juggernaut.
And he has a full-time job, by the way. He'll tell you that.
I know. It's just amazing. Plus, he writes for I don't know how many different online publications and magazine articles, and he's got I don't know how many blogs and websites. The guy must type fast, Gene.
Either that or he's on speed or something. I have no idea. We'll have to ask him how he manages to do this. I think the truth about Nick Redfern is that he does not sleep. His new book is called Monster Files, A Look Inside Government Secrets and Classified Documents on Bizarre Creatures and Extraordinary Animals. And this is so appropriate because now we're dealing with government secrecy, government interference, government intrusion. So we figure if they know everybody we call on the telephone, they can even break into Skype, I hear. You know, we thought the Skype communications we do for our networking, that's secure?
For nothing is secure, Gene. You should know that.
Here is more of our security coming up. Our security blanket with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris this week, we have our friend and a guest co-host for the Paracast and the most prolific author of recent memory, especially about paranormal subjects. It's Nick Redfern, and he's written two books in recent months about monsters. One is called Monster Diary, On the Road in Search of Strange and Sinister Creatures, and this one just out recently called Monster Files, A Look Inside Government Secrets and Classified Documents on Bizarre Creatures and Extraordinary Animals. Now, Nick, welcome back to the Paracast. Do you consider these books companion volumes or what?
I never really gave that a thought, actually. I mean, they're sort of totally different because a lot of the... I've written about 8 or 9 books on cryptozoology altogether, and most of them are written in the way I do the investigations, which is sort of on the road. You know, so when I'm doing an investigation, just let's say hypothetically, it's Bigfoot, you know, I take a lot of notes, and if I'm staying in some motel after the, you know, every night, I sort of write a bunch of notes of what happened during the day, then that allows me to sort of write the relevant chapter further down the line. So most of the books I do on cryptozoology are written in like a diary on the road format. But this one's different because it deals with government files, you know. It's a bit difficult to sort of talk about how you sat in a government archive, you know, for day after day. So I've sort of presented this in the way I've written other books, you know, where I talk about, you know, just the facts, so to speak.
Now, in a case like this, when you talk about government secrets and classified documents, was this done through the Freedom of Information Act? You didn't have some guy who lives in Hong Kong get the information for you.
No, no. Everything in the book, where it's a reference to an official document, it's all material that's surfaced through the Freedom of Information Act, which I use quite a lot, you know, to either obtain documents or to find documents a lot of people don't realize are actually already in the public domain. I mean, that's one of the interesting things. You know, you can go along to the National Archives in Maryland and find, you know, there's millions of documents on all sorts of obscure subjects just waiting to be inspected, and they've, in some cases, they've been declassified for decades, but, you know, nobody's really bothered looking at them. And so for that reason, it isn't always a case of just relying on newly surfaced stuff through the Freedom of Information Act. Also, taking a look at stuff that, you know, has just been sitting on like the definitive dusty shelf for 20 years or whatever.
I'm interested in the musty shelves. Would you explain what you mean by that? Just people have a record of something somewhere, or a journal or a diary, and they never looked at it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about government documents. I mean, I'll give you a classic example. In the Monster Files book, I think it's the second chapter in the book, it deals with British Royal Navy and Admiralty files on sea serpents that go back to the 1830s and through to about 1890. And this is like a huge packed dossier of not just like newspaper clippings or report, although they are in there as well, or just reports, you know, from inexperienced sailors. The vast majority of them are from captains and crews of military Royal Navy ships from like 150, 160 years ago. And somebody was actively collecting all this material for reasons we don't know. You know, it kind of makes them sound like some 19th century Fox Mulder or something like that. But what's interesting is that these files were actually declassified like 25 years ago, but nobody had sort of bothered to do research, you know, to see if there was anything on sea serpents. And over the years, I'd heard rumors about sea serpent files, you know, held by the military, etc. So I just went looking at the archives and found them. And, you know, it wasn't a case of the government saying, oh, well, we're not sure if you can have them. You know, they'd been declassified years before, but nobody had ever took the time to see if the government had a sea serpent file, you know.
It's just a matter of having all that documentation sitting there and no one pays attention. Because it's kind of screwy?
No, it's because nobody bothers, you know, I think most people just don't bother looking for it because they're there looking for other things. You know, it's like if I go to the National Archives in Maryland and look for UFO material, you know, I'm not going to pull some file at random looking for something on, I don't know, the Cuba Missile Crisis, if you like, because I'm not interested in that, so why would I go looking for it? And, you know, sometimes files have names that aren't necessarily relevant to everything that's in there. I mean, I can remember going to the National Archives in one occasion, I think it was 2001, and it was just a file of the American Research and Development Board from the late 1940s. As I dug through it, I actually found a lot of correspondence that was actually nothing to do with the Research and Development Board. It was all farming files on foot and mouth disease. So, you know, something had clearly, I think, been misfiled, you know, or even if it was a part of their work, you know, who would have thought that the Research and Development Board would be interested in foot and mouth disease? But, you know, if you researched that area, it would be, but you wouldn't know. And it was even in there unless you stumbled upon it by looking through a totally or seemingly unconnected file.
Yeah, but it doesn't surprise me in the least that in a government file you should find files about foot and mouth disease. I think that pretty much sums up the government and how they deal with certain subjects. They definitely have their foot in their mouth.
I think certainly, you know, when you've got massive files like some of them at the archives, you know, stuff does get shared with other people in the office, and somebody misfiles something, and they're just like, well, we're never going to need this again. You know, they just file it away. And then somebody stumbles across it 40 years later and wonders, you know, what the hell is it doing here versus doing there, you know?
Yeah, there's probably just an amazing amount of information that people just, as you're saying, aren't aware of. And if we even knew the half of it, we'd be probably pretty shocked at how much documentation is already there available for people. You just have to know the right search words and search terms, and who knows what you'll be able to dig up. And,
well,
and Nick, you're a perfect example of someone that's willing to do the work.
Well, I mean, I'll give you a classic example. You know, the FBI's got this website called The Vault, which is like a really good resource tool where you can download literally hundreds of thousands of pages of formerly classified FBI documents on everything from Marilyn Monroe to 1930s era gangsters like Bonnie and Clyde, cattle mutilations. But a lot of people think because the Vault website was only created like 2 years ago, they think or assume that that's when the files were released. Those cattle mutilation files, which are now online at the Vault, they were released. I got copies of those in 1989, and I shared them with Tim Good, who used them in his 1991 book, Alien Liaison. So, in other words, just because the files have just been uploaded to the website, what people don't realize is that they're actually widely available where for photocopying by writing to the FBI in the pre-internet era.
Outstanding. It's amazing, though.
Well, I don't think it's outstanding. It's just one of these bureaucratic things a lot of people don't realize, you know, in terms of how files surface, when they surface, and, you know, it's not, they don't always just surface when they become publicly visible. You know, they could be sitting there for years.
These undiscovered treasures, just sitting there,
yeah,
and people
exactly,
don't look at them.
That's the best way I would describe a lot of the files I use in the book, were sort of more like undiscovered raw material rather than, you know, sort of filing new requests today. It was more just going on like a detective mission to see what had been released that we didn't know had been released.
We know. We have Nick Redfern joining us with Gene and Chris. The book is called Monster Files. So much more to come with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
You've seen them on Doomsday Preppers. You've seen them on network television, Shipping Wars, and the History Channel. Now, the strongest shelters money can buy are here. Atlas Survival Shelters, made in America from 10-foot diameter galvanized corrugated pipe, up to 11 times stronger than square box shelters, and built to last up to 200 years. And you won't believe the amenities. Atlas shelters contain microwaves, refrigerators, big screen TVs, water tanks, septic systems, bulletproof hatches, and much more. Virtually everything you have at home, just buried 20 feet deep and bomb-proof. See the amazing Atlas Survival Shelters at atlassurvivalshelters.com or call 1-855-4-BUNKER. That's 855-4-BUNKER or atlassurvivalshelters.com. Financing now available. Atlas Survival Shelters. Better prepared than scared.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. Or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, TerraGanix.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we have Nick Redfern, prolific author of so many books I can't keep track of them. I have a big question to ask of you, Nick. You have a full-time job, you're working stiff, but you still manage to turn out all these books. I think the big question is how.
It's not that difficult because, I mean, I always sort of try and stick to like an 8-to-5 routine. If, you know, I do like 2 books a year, which is sort of what I average, then that's a book every 6 months. Well, you know, if I have a couple of hours free here and there, you know, I don't sort of like to work nights or weekends, but if I do have an hour free here or there, you know, and I've got all the raw material, I can crank out a few pages in a couple of hours. And, you know, a couple of hours every couple of days spread over 6 months amounts to, you know, a lot of time. So in that respect, it's not that difficult. It's more a case of juggling and prioritizing, you know, time and projects.
Well, and
like
being diligent about it, too, and being disciplined.
You know, I treat what I do as a job, and I don't mean by that it's just a job and I have no interest in it. You know, you have to have a passion. You know, I have a big passion for everything I do for the most part in terms of writing, but I have to be disciplined and treat it like a job in terms of not slacking off when I've got time to do it and getting down and doing it rather than saying, oh, you know, I'm going to watch that show I taped last night. No, I'll watch that show when I've finished it, like,
yeah.
And then after that dinner or whatever, you know. And I found if I don't do that, you know, you start to get backed up and things pile up and you miss a deadline or a deadline looms, you know. And I find you have to, for me at least, you know, I work best in a structured fashion. You know, I know I have a lot of friends in the writing field. They like to work through the night in chaotic fashion, you know, and that's fine. But that's not my way of doing it.
I think some people who do this kind of writing, or any kind of writing, what they do is they wait as long as possible, close to the deadline, and then in various Herculean efforts, manage to complete what they're doing.
Well, you know, for some people that probably works because they really then got to focus the mind on it. And
the quality of the writing
suffers. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't do it like that. But I do, you know, I do know of people who they get energized, you know, by the fact that the deadline is coming or, you know, they're on a time limit or whatever. And they just sort of, you know, they just get fueled up on cocaine, Coca-Cola, you know, coffee, whatever their thing of choice is, you know, and just crank it out, you know. So, but I can't do that, you know. I have to have structure, and I like to keep specific hours and whatever, you know.
Well, don't change it, because it ain't broke.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I have people who think I live some sort of weird Hunter S. Thompson life, you know, where it's crazy in the office all day. It's crazy stuff just going down. It's not, you know. I get up, a bowl of cornflakes and a hot cup of English tea and work from 8 till 5, you know, and stuff. And then I do the next, exactly the next day, you know. That's it. No sort of sitting around with vodka bottles at 12 o'clock in the day. You know, I'd never get nothing done.
Or you'd become Jim Moseley.
Well, he lived a long time on it.
He held
out
quite a bit.
You worked on that for 50 years.
I guess he didn't do him any harm.
Yeah, he worked for 50 years on being Jim Moseley.
Yeah.
That's amazing. In any case, let's just get back to your discovery of these documents. Now, any of this involve Freedom of Information inquiries?
A fair bit of it was, well, I mean, all the documents in the book have surfaced through the Freedom of Information Act. Some cases it was where I applied for the files because I knew they existed because people had referenced them. Other cases, you know, it was just a matter of just sort of going through archives and wondering if there might be something there and, you know, 80-90% of the time there isn't. 10%, you know, you sort of hit pay dirt or whatever.
So what surprised you the most in terms of the kind of information you found? Is there like one or two cases where you can say, I didn't expect to find this. Wow, this is incredible.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the most intriguing documents, for me at least anyway, now I know some people probably listening to this are going to disagree with my interpretation, but I got hold of a RAND document which had been prepared for the US Air Force in the early 1950s, and it was basically sort of guidelines and directives about how sort of paranormal phenomena could be utilized as a tool of psychological warfare against enemy troops. You know, that's to say, if, you know, country A is fighting country B, and country B, that their troops and people are very superstitious of vampires, let's spread stories and legends of vampires being on the loose in their territory. And, you know, it'll scare them or deter them from, you know, fighting in specific areas that, you know, are of sort of strategic interest. And one of the things in the file, when I read it, it immediately sort of reminded me of the famous Flatwoods monster story of 1952. And Flatwoods is a town, little town in West Virginia, where in 1952, a number of townsfolk, villagers, however you want to term them, reported seeing this strange light come down on a nearby hill that was sort of shrouded in trees. And they saw this 12-foot-tall, flashing, robotic-type monster, hence the name the Flatwoods Monster, come sort of looming slowly out of the trees and from the hill. And it was described as being about 12 feet tall, and it had a head shaped like the image of the Ace of Spades card on a deck of cards. Had these glowing eyes, and it had these flashing arcs of light, etc., and like surges of energy, you know, coming from its body, kind of like Dr. Frankenstein, you know, bringing the monster to life, that sort of thing. And they were naturally terrified and fled for their lives. Well, this was 52. Now, this particular document was dated roughly a year before, and it includes a very interesting British Army story about how, during the Second World War, when the British were fighting the Italians in Italy, they came up with this sort of a brilliant or crackpot, depending which way you look at it, brilliant or crackpot idea to create like a 12-foot-tall demon. And the plan was it would have all these flashing lights on it and these glowing eyes and also a head shaped like an ace of spades in a deck of cards. And the idea was to sort of roll it through the streets at night or pull it through and have people think that the devil was visiting them. And the idea was to try and make it look like that if you were allied with the Nazis and the Italians, etc., the Axis powers, you know, the devil was going to come for you. And, of course, in a lot of these little Italian villages in the mountains, they reportedly took a great deal of notice and came over to help the Allies. But when you read, you know, the description of this British robotic monster-type thing that they built...
It sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah, it sounds extremely like the Flatwoods Monster. And, of course, the whole thing with the British contraption is probably the best way to describe it, is that it was used as a tool of psychological warfare. And that's why it appeared in this Rand report. And then a year or two later, we see something eerily similar appearing in Flatwoods. Now, Flatwoods was a little town in like a rural area. And that's exactly the sort of location that the British Army tested their device out in as well. And of course, you know, people say, well, why would you do that? Well, you know, a small enclosed environment with a small population, it's very easy to gauge how quickly rumors spread and belief systems develop. I suspect from reading the file that, you know, maybe the Flatwoods Monster was an outgrowth of this PSYOP in the Second World War, and it was one undertaken in Flatwoods. You know, possibly it may have been nothing to do directly with the whole UFO issue. It may have just been done to try and determine factors relating to how quickly rumors spread and belief systems can be nurtured and manipulated, possibly.
Well, with the Flatwoods Monster, what always troubled me about that particular case is the fact that there was no repetition. It seemed to exist in a universe in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was no other case like it.
No, that's actually a really good point because, I mean, in the 50s, you had a lot of reports of, you know, hairy dwarfs around the world and, you know, these diminutive aliens and alien second soil samples and disc-shaped saucers, the greys in later years and flying triangles all over the place. But you're right, the Flatwoods Monster was more of something that just sort of popped into our reality and had never surfaced again. You know, maybe it was actually taken back to the warehouse that it was made. Who knows, you know?
That's Warehouse 13, ladies and gentlemen. Nick Redfern joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Got a simple question for you. Can you sell? Yes? Okay. Can you sell the intangible? If yes, and you'd like to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, with no overtime, no weekends, if you're passionate about not closing sales, but about opening relationships, if you truly have a desire to serve global clients who need your advertising expertise, and you're local to the Twin Cities and Burnsville, are hardworking, self-driven, with experience in sales, marketing, or advertising, are personable and a whiz on the phone, GCN wants to talk with you right now. GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, is one of the largest independent talk radio networks in the world, and we're hiring right now. We offer benefits and an excellent commission structure. Experience preferred, but we'll train the right person. Is that you? Submit your resume today to advertise at GCNlive.com. Again, that's advertise at GCNlive.com. Come work with the Genesis Communications Network, an equal opportunity employer.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
When you need it the most, will your generator, power equipment, or vehicle be ready? Gas and diesel fuels go bad quickly when stored, and more than half of generator failures during disasters occur as a result of expired fuel. PRI fuel stabilizers keep your fuel fresh for when you need it most. Nuclear power stations, emergency service providers, and ships at sea rely on PRI fuel stabilizers. And you can too. Call 888-776-9373 or visit PRIproducts.com to find the dealer nearest you.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a silver dollar in a book explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
In our previous segment, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Redfern revealed to the listeners of the Paracast his infamous Flatwoods Monster voice. But just specifically about the Flatwoods Monster, other than the possibility of some kind of test, what else?
Well, the other option is that it really was some sort of monstrous alien creature, as the witnesses believed. Now, you know, as people who've read my books will know, I do believe in the existence of a genuine UFO phenomenon, but I think it has more paranormal leanings to it than necessarily extraterrestrial, but I still believe it's real. You know, I don't rule out the possibility at all that the Flatwoods Monster was some genuinely paranormal, monstrous creature, but if it was, I just find it very eerily coincidental that this British Army device was not only the exact same height, in description, it's 12 feet high, but it had the same weird arcing lights on it. It sort of staggered along rather than, you know, sort of walked along, so to speak. The time frame was just a few years apart. So those issues lead me to believe we shouldn't rule out the psyop angle, if you like. But, you know, it could just be one of life's weird coincidences, you know, that it was so close to something that was genuinely unexplained.
Well, I think you're on to something myself, and I think that just a really good example of Nick Redfern catching a nice pearl. Either that or
it was. I mean, this was a FOIA document that really the significance of it hadn't been necessarily recognized. I mean, there are things in there that might be of interest to, you know, people who are interested in how religion's being used, because there were stories about how the Allies in the Second World War, at the end of the Second World War into the early years of the Cold War, spread stories to the KGB and the Russians about how supposedly the Virgin Mary had been seen following Allied troops, you know, as if to try and impress upon the Allies that God was on the side of the West and not the Russians, you know. So a lot of weird stuff like that in the file that was of less interest to me, but, you know, somebody who researches how religion can be used as a tool of manipulation, they would probably find that aspect of the file interesting.
There's also the correlation, too. Some of our long-range rangers and special ops forces in Vietnam use the spade cards out of a playing card deck. And evidently the spade in Vietnamese culture is also kind of a evil eye or a very negative, has a negative connotation. And I find that there's another interesting kind of parallel or correlation there.
Yeah, well, I actually mentioned this in the book, this particular file that I also got hold of. It talks about how the Ace of Spades card was sort of seen as this, he's like a deathly omen if you find an Ace of Spades card. And so the troops would leave them, you know, where the North Vietnamese would find them and get terrified by them, essentially. So, you know, the very fact that PSYOP personnel were already employing, or you know, in later years were employing the Ace of Spades image, it makes it more understandable why that might also have been employed, you know, in Flatwoods as well.
But of course, that's the case, I guess, is officially listed as unsolved, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, what's interesting is that I actually found a bunch of material on the Flatwoods Monster at the National Archives in Maryland. And what it was a collection of newspaper clippings on the case that the U.S. Air Force Office of Special Operations had put together in the days, weeks, and months immediately afterwards. So somebody was clearly taking an interest what the media and like the early UFO fanzines of that era were saying about the case, which I find that interesting as well, you know, that it wasn't, there wasn't so much a file on the event. It was a file on what the media and the people like us at the time were saying about it, their opinions and ideas on what was actually seen.
Oh, they just love to know about people like us.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that because, you know, all this stuff that's going on now with the NSA and things like that, people often forget that one of the easiest ways to monitor a community like the UFO community is just to go along to conferences and read books because invariably, and even I'm, you know, I put my hands up to this, when I uncover stuff, I write about it, you know, so the easiest way to monitor what's going on in the community and the latest revelations is just to read everybody's blogs. You know, you don't have to do it underhanded. You just click on, you know, Nick Redfern's blogs and, hey, you know, I've just come back from the National Archives and found this, you know. Sometimes, you know, the easiest way of watching someone is actually one of the most profitable.
It's interesting how so much of what we do is really online.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, people say, have the Men in Black ever visited you? I say, well, no, because everything I uncover, for the most part, I publish. You know, they've only got to wait 6 months. They're going to see it in a book anyway, you know.
Well, that leads us to a question by Talking Meat Suit, who's one of our recent additions at forum.theparacast.com. And he's asking, have you ever caught any flack, Nick, from the powers that be, quote-unquote, for writing any of your books? And I guess you're saying no.
Well, no, but the main reason is because I use stuff that's legally being released through the Freedom of Information Act. I mean, I castigated in a couple of my books people like Gary McKinnon. They're idiots. You know, if you're gonna hack into the computer systems of a government agency, you know, you deserve what you get. I don't have any sympathy for people who do that. You know, there's ways and means to get information, and I do it through the Freedom of Information Act, and, you know, that's how I acquire information, legally and via, you know, requesting files, and if they surface and they can be released, I quote them in a book, you know.
Well, this dude who has come forth to admit that he disclosed to the press this information about the NSA scooping up metadata about telephone calls, do you think he was being a fool to come forward? Is he looking for glory? What's he looking for?
Well, I have no idea, and I think we'll learn more as this all goes on. I mean, what I would say, you know, is that I'm not sure to what extent, you know, blanket watching everybody actually achieves anything, you know, or the entire audience of or customers of Verizon. I'm not sure that how that can actually achieve anything. You know, I think there's still a good argument to be said for, you know, like in the 40s, 50s in the Cold War, that raw intelligence gathering data still has a large role to play. You know, I kind of view it similar to, you know, just drawing parallels with how wars have been fought over the years. You know, I think there's still room for raw intelligence data rather than blanketing everybody.
Now, have you ever been, I might as well ask this question, in all the years you've been doing this sort of research and publishing information about possible government documents and stuff like that, has anyone from the government come over to say, hi, Nick, what's going on?
No. Well, again, and I think that happens when people, you know, are doing stuff that potentially looking into things that are still classified. You know, I write about stuff after I've legally obtained it through the Freedom of Information Act. You know, I think that's why possibly, I mean, when the whole Roswell thing kicked off and people like Bill Moore were watched very closely, that was because they were digging into something that was, you know, potentially sensitive, the whole Roswell issue. And, you know, he got these visits and, you know, contacts from military people, insiders, and, you know, all these questionable documents and things like that, which I think was a lot of it probably designed to deflect him into other areas and, you know, into where he could be safely controlled, etc. But, I mean, when you're doing things through the Freedom of Information Act, you know, there's one literal thing to remember, one simple fact. It's stuff that the government's let you see, and that's what I use. So, you know, that's probably why, you know, I don't get flack.
That brings us to another question. This one's from Burnt State, who's one of our most active posters at forum.theparacast.com. And he says, does the fact that the government spends time researching monsters point to an enormous waste of tax dollars, or is there some odd logic at work that says every rock should be looked under and every lake monster sighting investigated, because you never know what is either connected to the enemy or will give you potential power over the enemy? What do you think is behind government investigations of pyramids and Noah's Ark?
Well, that's actually a very good question, because, you know, we have this issue where governments do often investigate weird stuff. And I think a lot of the times it is purely and simply because, you know, the money is available to do it and one particular project is seen as being relevant. I mean, I'll give you a classic example. In Wales, you know, which is right next door to England, where I'm originally from, just before the outbreak of the First World War, when it was clear that war was going to break out with Germany, the British Royal Navy came up with this idea to train SEALs that would be strapped with explosives to basically swim at high speed towards German ships, you know, and then when they would get close to it, the bombs attached to them would be detonated, you know. It was basically a case of the Germans not looking for SEALs swimming under the water, but actually looking for another ship, so they'd be taken by surprise.
I'll tell you what, we will be taken by surprise. If we don't do this, they'll cut us off unceremoniously. Nick Redfern joining Gene and Chris. You're in.
We're in the Paracast. Yes, we are.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.